You're listening to Radio IQ. Today, we're looking back at the events last September when Hurricane Helene brought flooding to the Appalachian Mountains and what's happened in the years since. Dr. William Mark Handy has a practice in Abington, about 15 miles from Damascus. After Helene, he started going door to door, checking on survivors.
So I'd never really been in a big devastation like this before. Didn't know what to do, and everybody started coming to me. I should know this. Well, I didn't. I wasn't trained in disaster.
He and a group of physicians traveled up haulers throughout Damascus and Taylor's Valley on a van with the Health Wagon. It's a nonprofit that brings healthcare to people in Southwest Virginia. They set up in the Damascus Town Park, delivering oxygen and insulin, and helping folks get refills for their medicines. He lives in North Carolina, where many more people had lost their lives. One night, on his way home, Dr. Handy pulled over and began writing about what he had seen and heard from survivors.
So I was just driving down the road one night about 9 or 10 o'clock, and the Lord said, just stop and pull over, and I started writing down the words he put in my head.
Handy plays banjo, and he put the words to music. He asked a group of fellow musicians to play along with him on a song he wrote called Helene.
Volunteers from all around gather in these majestic hymns to lend a healing hand for those in need. Risking life for their fellow man, asking nothing in return. They searched with faith, led by the grace of God.
And then the last of it goes, you know, the mountain proud and mountain strong, mountain people with their hearts of gold, lift up our hearts to heal our mountain home. So I just wanted to be that the last lyrics to identify the song as a thing to uplift us and give people hope.
Helene, oh Helene, how I wish you had gone another way. Mountain proud, mountain strong, mountain folk with their hearts of gold, lift up our souls to heal our mountain home.
In the immediate aftermath, just about everyone Handy saw was struggling. Even those who were volunteering to help their neighbors.
We always live on an adrenaline when it first happens and we're rushing to do things. But then when things calm down in a couple of days and you kind of look at everything that you got going on there, that's a big thing with that.
As the months went on and cold settled on the mountains, some of the people who had been flooded were still living in tents.
I had one family that we took care of, and I went out there, and it was snowing. And I'm like, oh, can't have this. I mean, she was shivering, or someone was shivering. I was like, I can't stand this, because you can't be out here, and it, you know, it's 20 degrees, and it's pouring the snow, and you live in a tent on the side of a creek.
He and other volunteers donated money to get the family into a hotel until they could find more permanent shelter. Nearly a year after the storm, many of these folks are still dealing with the long-term health impacts.
It is harder for some to move on than others emotionally and physically because they don't have the money. There's people that can't go back to where they lived at before because it was washed away completely and just damaged so bad you can't build a house back there or put a camper there at all.
The survivors we spoke with said they had trouble feeling settled long after the storm. Again, here's Deanna Wolf, who lost her mobile home in Damascus and is getting a new house through the Trails to Recovery program.
And I still want to go home. Everybody tells me once I get in the house that feeling will go away, that it will become home. But like I said, I still want to go home.
10 months after the flood, she was still living in an apartment outside town, waiting on the sewage system at her new home to be completed.
And I mean, I've got a great house built. It's really nice. It's like I can't get closure yet.
Linda McMurray, who has been in her new home since this spring, says she too is still adjusting.
Sometimes when you come in, it doesn't feel like home, and nothing in it is ours. It's difficult getting used to all new things.
One thing that helped was a small family reunion Linda and her husband hosted in their new home. They had to get used to less space for everyone, but it felt good to be surrounded by their children and grandchildren. During the summer, a group of high school students from Northern Virginia traveled to help them paint as part of a volunteer project through their church group. She shared with them that she and Carl had volunteered themselves with their church group all over the country after Katrina and other natural disasters. She said those experiences have made her feel humble, and she knows many others have experienced worse. They're grateful to have a home and each other.
Every day, I think it's easier, especially after this week, seeing the work that these kids did and knowing that they're making memories that will be with them the rest of their life, that they helped someone and they heard our story and see what it means to us for someone to come in with compassion and an eagerness to help rebuild.
The homes people like Linda and Carl McMurray have now are built to withstand high winds and are better equipped to hold up after a flood. But what about the bridges and roads that were washed out during Helene? In Damascus, one of the bridges broke apart from its foundations and washed downstream. I stand nearby. Beside me is John Bechtold, a bridge engineer with the Virginia Department of Transportation.
The foundations were undermined. You know, these original foundations for this bridge were built probably back in the 20s, about 100 years ago. So they didn't, you know, they went down as deep as they thought the storm water would ever go at that point. And, you know, we had a bigger storm than probably they ever expected. And so, unfortunately, that caused the the bridge to get washed downstream. But we're going back. The plans to go back with is a deeper foundation. They'll have some piles that go all the way down to the bedrock. Build something back that won't. We shouldn't have that kind of problem in the future.
Outside Damascus, another VDOT employee, Christopher Byington, drives along a stretch of Route 58 that was massively destroyed during Helene.
And then right here in front of the vehicle, you know, all of this was just gone. If you just imagine, this was just like a large hole that went all the way down to the bedrock right here.
This road runs between tall mountains on one side and a creek on the other. They considered trying to reroute the road in some places to build it on higher ground, away from the creek. But Byington says that would have been nearly impossible because of the geography of the land that's available here. In one part of the Route 58 rebuild, they used boulders the size of cars, weighing a ton apiece. They used a crane to build a wall with these giant rocks. Byington says this technique isn't new, but it is effective, and it will do a better job in future floods at keeping the road in place.
It builds a very solid platform to build the road on, and with stone of that size, you know, it's going to take some major force to move it. So we are very confident that we've built back better than what we had before.
That's the hope. Virginia's Department of Transportation has been working for several years to develop a resilience improvement plan to identify the areas of the state where increased flooding could lead to road and bridge failures. They've created a visualization tool to help engineers foresee the impacts of future flooding and landslides. Chris Swanson, VDOT's Environmental Provision Director, says they recognize that climate change could cause more catastrophic storms in the future.
The intensity may change, the duration may change, and the frequency may change. So all of that can lead up to, do we need to be designing our projects a little differently to account for those changes? Even our maintenance and operations efforts as well. You know, if they're going to start experiencing more flooding in a certain part of the state, their planning efforts and response efforts also need to be informed of such things.
Their modeling uses predictions from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and FEMA's floodplain maps. Because of unprecedented flooding from Helene, some of this data will probably need to be updated, though that process can sometimes take years.
As a result of Helene, we are trying to evaluate how to bring that in more readily and more responsibly to make sure that that data can be used again for informed decision making.
With Helene, the weather predictions were fairly accurate, but it still caught many people by surprise. In Damascus, for example, the courthouse remained open the morning of the storm. Police Chief Kermit Turner even had to go to court to testify in a case, despite the weather predictions. Within hours, he was wading in water up to his chest, rescuing residents.
We actually swam across power lines, phone lines, and trees.
Meanwhile, Turner's own son, also a first responder, was helping evacuate residents when their fire truck was sucked into a sinkhole. His son and everyone escaped, but everything that happened during Helene taught Turner just how quickly flooding can turn into a crisis. He says next time he's going to pay more attention to flood warnings.
I wouldn't say hit the panic button kind of thing, but I'm a little more prepared, and I will be a little more cautious now than I was beforehand, because I've seen high water multiple times in Damascus and it never been that high.
Don Thomas works at CNA, a nonprofit research organization, where one of the issues she studies is how emergency responders make decisions during and after natural disasters. She says in addition to stronger infrastructure like roads and bridges, communities need to have plans for how to interpret the impacts of flooding.
And then helping to make decisions based on that. That's where the breakdown is.
She says after disasters, communities often come together with a lot of momentum to rebuild. But over time, that energy can get worn down.
Long-term recovery is incredibly complex, right? Not everybody agrees on the right way to recover. Not everybody agrees that you build back stronger if that's going to take longer versus getting things back up and running faster. It's always going to take a lot of time and effort. And yes, during that time, appetite for the burden definitely wanes.
Damascus Town Manager Chris Bell says they have plans to work on several flood mitigation projects to protect residents from future flooding. And they want to prepare a plan for what to do if there's another flood or a wildfire. After floods, there's an added fire risk because there's more debris in the forest. They're hoping to start these long-term projects as soon as possible, before the memory of Helene fades.
You always think, oh, won't happen to us until it does. In 25 years, that probably won't be the case. The folks living here may not remember, or they'll be new. And so now is the time to take advantage of those funds that are available and kind of strike while iron's hot to go ahead and start rolling out plans and programming to prepare us and be more resilient.
But getting there is proving challenging. Damascus still hasn't received some of their reimbursement money from FEMA.
We're still working through some emergency debris removal in order to get reimbursed for all the work that was done.
For a small town, Bell says it's really challenging to figure out how to pay for all this.
Residential-wise, we have less than 800 people. It's a small, small town.
The Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Christy Noem, says she is personally reviewing any request for FEMA assistance and reimbursements over $100,000. Some employees within her agency signed a letter in August saying this is causing delays that make the agency unable to respond to natural disasters quickly. They also raised concerns with FEMA's cuts to some programs that help communities do mitigation work to be more resilient against future natural disasters. Noem has challenged these allegations and says FEMA is more prepared than ever to keep people safe. It's tough to know exactly what the months and years ahead will look like for FEMA, but we do know some numbers of the funding they've provided so far. The agency has awarded hundreds of millions of dollars to North Carolina for recovery after Helene. In Virginia, FEMA has awarded $18 million to residents and $36 million to communities for nearly 200 projects, and that number is expected to go up, depending on how many grants the agency approves. More millions will be spent to rebuild the Virginia Creeper Trail, though that money is coming from the U.S. Forest Service, not FEMA. Again, here's Linda McMurray.
Parts of the Creeper Trail are gone. I mean, they're just wiped out. So when you think about that, it's amazing to imagine how they're going to rebuild the Creeper Trail in those areas where the side of the mountain that they were on is just gone.
Residents like Mary Gale, who have spent the past year rebuilding houses, are now hoping they can get Damascus through the next big challenge, keeping businesses open.
I think we need to think outside the box, because I think it's going to be a while before this Creeper Trail is passable for all people. And so we've got to start thinking elsewhere in keeping Damascus alive.
Some residents have started a list of local lodging options in the area in the hopes that construction workers rebuilding the Creeper Trail will spend their money locally. In Wythe County, Elizabeth King recently moved back into her once flooded home. She's the one whose husband is buried in a waterproof casket near the house along the New River. She says her memories of her husband and their family are there. She received some money to rebuild from her insurance company and with FEMA. The family has spent much of the past year gutting their mom's house and rebuilding it. They did a lot of the work themselves. And finally, a year after Helene, Deanna Wolf in Damascus was also able to move into her new home.
I've lived all across the country and I've never been in a place that felt like this. Damascus is just an exceptional place with exceptional people.
She's starting to feel more settled as she organizes her furniture. Her new house is in a different location than the mobile home park. It's on higher ground, not in a floodplain like she was before. She's hopeful that if her community does experience another storm like Helene, she will have a better chance of staying safe. This has been Mountain Hurricane, Radio IQ's documentary about rebuilding after Helene. Music was provided by Trevor McKenzie and Justin Faircloth, who recorded this song at Buddy Holler Studios in Lansing, North Carolina. Other music was by Mark Handy, Ethan Grillo, Ivy Shepherd and the South Carolina Broadcasters, Montlesser and Lobo Loco. On our website, you can find resources to learn more about preparing for natural disasters and researching whether your property is at risk of flooding. That's at radioiq.org. Our executive producer is David Seidel. Our associate producer is Nick Gilmore. I'm Roxy Todd.